This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks for listening. Faster than a speeding text message, as elusive as an untraceable email, able to leak tall tales in a single click. To him, the U.S. government is kryptonite. Of course, I'm speaking of Snowden. Edward Snowden, the man of leaks, is also on the move, we learn. The leaker with some frequent flyer miles now will be charting his course this hour. And also the worries within the Obama administration that internal leaks constitute a government-wide threat to national security. We will also be watching the tentative peace talks in Afghanistan, a nation considering its own sovereignty for the first time in 30 years of war. The possibility of junk science feeding fears of infertility among American women in their 30s, and a beauty pageant that is not about staring. HBO airs a documentary tonight about a beauty contest for girls with disabilities. Miss, You Can Do It. That's later this hour. But first, NSA leaker Edward Snowden has left Hong Kong, where last week we were talking about whether the Chinese would hand him over to the U.S. government. It seems they wanted nothing whatsoever to do with him after the U.S. signaled in a sealed complaint that Edward Snowden would be charged with crimes under the Espionage Act. Snowden himself was reportedly told by Chinese officials that no one would stand in his way if he left. Snowden, we believe, flew from Hong Kong to Moscow and is believed to be headed to Ecuador, where he could seek political asylum. But Ellen Barry, Moscow bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, says after a whirlwind few days, it's unclear, along with the rest of the World Press Corps, about whether Snowden is or ever was in Moscow.
You know, it's been a very surreal couple of days, I have to say, John. A huge plane took off headed for Havana, which I would say about half of the Moscow-based press corps on it. People had really scrambled to get tickets on that flight and to get here because they believed that he was going to be sitting in seat 17A. And I actually got kicked off the flight because I didn't have a Cuban visa. And after the doors had closed, it became clear that Snowden wasn't on the plane, or at least he wasn't visible to anyone who was on the plane, you know, unless he is somewhere on the plane or he's not in view.
Well, maybe that just means the Moscow press corps wants to get set up in Havana for some, you know, parachute landing.
I don't know. The most tragic part of this whole thing is that that's one of the air routes that is that doesn't serve alcohol.
Well, that's a story for the Moscow press corps to consider. Let's talk a little bit about what it's been like in Moscow. This is an echo of the Cold War on some level. It comes on the heels of a fairly blunt conversation between Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama regarding Syria. What's the mood there?
You know, I think it's just felt like we were all chasing shadows. It's been basically accepted by most of us for the last 2 days that he was here in Russia. But the truth is, no one that I'm aware of has seen him here. There have been no photographs of him, and there are no Russian officials who have gone on record by name saying that he was here. So now, especially after this strange incident with the flight, I think people are questioning every piece of information we've gotten about this whole scenario.
Edward Snowden, it would appear, is both too hot to handle and also a tantalizing way of connecting or at least infuriating the United States.
And I mean, he's also the source of a lot of information that many governments would like to get a hold of. And so I think the question of where he is actually a very serious one.
Was there any discussion, even in the Moscow press corps, of Russia, the Russian government itself offering asylum to Edward Snowden?
You know, that actually was discussed couple weeks ago and at a fairly high level. And Putin's press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, said at the time that Russia would be open to considering such a request. And that's really the extent of the Russian position, but he's, you know, viewed rather favorably by many officials here.
What about the people in Moscow? Do they have any sense of Edward Snowden, of who he is, of what kind of a character he is, hero, villain?
Other than the reporters today who are running around at, you know, jumping at shadows, I didn't notice that there was very much excitement from regular people in the airport. The only folks that I saw who seemed to take an interest in it were Americans. So I think it is a case that is quite interesting to officials here. I'm not sure ordinary people care all that much.
Ellen Berry, Moscow bureau chief for our partner, the New York Times, possibly staking out the whereabouts of Edward Snowden, believed to be in Moscow. Thanks so much, Ellen.
No problem.
You know, I think this is all very John le Carré meets Carl Hiaasen, if this were a comic novel, which it is not. But even New York Senator Charles Schumer on CNN's State of the Union over the weekend couldn't resist what seemed to be a Three Stooges reference about Russia and the Snowden affair.
What's infuriating here is Prime Minister Putin of Russia aiding and abetting Snowden's escape. The bottom line is very simple. Allies are supposed to treat each other in decent ways, and Putin always seems almost eager to put a finger in the eye of the United States.
Russian fingers in Washington eyes, sure, but Ecuador? That's where we're told Edward Snowden is headed. Ecuador technically is currently the home of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who's currently holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in Britain. And that connection may be why Ecuador is said to be formally considering a request for asylum by fugitive Edward Snowden. Why Ecuador? Will Grant joins us, Mexico and Central America correspondent for the BBC in Quito. Will, is there a press corps stakeout assembling there in Quito?
Hi. Well, yes, there's certainly a lot of press gathering Quito now, all really through the day on Sunday and now on Monday. People have been gathering, have been appearing, essentially following this route that we've heard is expected to be the route from Russia. But it's still so unclear exactly what's happening now that people are wondering whether or not they are also going to be a sort of empty-handed, if you like, as journalists, as the Russian press corps on the trip to Cuba. But I guess we will find out whether or not he makes it to Ecuador in the coming hours and days.
Well, this certainly has all the frenzy of the arrival of a pope, but of course it's a very different story. Will Grant, how have people in Ecuador followed the Julian Assange case of the Ecuadorian embassy there in Britain? Is there a sense of nationalism, of identity, of pride associated with harboring Julian Assange? And then what are we to make of where the Edward Snowden case would take all of this?
I think there's a mixture, really, of a certain degree of pride for those who support President Rafael Correa, in as much as they agree that Ecuador should be a sort of safe haven for whistleblowers, should be the sort of place that they believe is backing people who, from their point of view, are important in terms of the freedom of press and so on, and basically follow Rafael Correa, President Rafael Correa's argument about granting political asylum to Mr. Assange. But also, I think there's a sense of bemusement again by Ecuadorians that their little country in the Andes, if you like, has been sort of put at the center of this maelstrom about international freedoms, about spying, about whistleblowing, and suddenly they seem to be right at the heart of this question again. I think very much it depends on one's point of view here in Ecuador. Obviously, Rafael Correa has a lot of support. He just won recently the election here with a very, very big majority. So I would say most of his backers sort of broadly welcome both the Julian Assange decision and, if it comes, the decision in favor of Mr. Snowden as well.
And it certainly wouldn't be the first time in world history that an odd species, one of a kind, made its home in Ecuador, the Galapagos Islands. If we're to recall the Darwin expedition to Ecuador, I mean, Edward Snowden embodies characteristics of a saboteur and of a spy. I'm wondering if there's any tradition in Ecuador of monitoring domestic communications, if, you know, the Snowden charges could apply to Ecuador as well as the United States.
Well, the whole question of communications, control of the media is always rethrown up here in Ecuador after the situation with Mr. Assange and his request and eventually granted for political asylum. There are a lot of people saying that there was an irony in as much as Mr. Correa, President Correa, has a very tight control of the press, that there's very restrictive press laws here that have gone through. He argues the opposite, that in fact what he's doing is breaking down decades of control of the press by just a handful of wealthy families. And that's an ongoing argument here. In terms of listening in terms of wiretapping, in terms of espionage, that's something I think which hasn't really been dominating the press here. But I was the correspondent in Venezuela for many years, and certainly there was always a lot of paranoia about people listening to phone calls and strange recordings appearing on television. So it is certainly part of the kind of general fabric, the situation in this part of the world at the moment.
Well, Will Grant evokes some of that paranoia for us now. I suspect there are all kinds of scenarios here. Has the U.S. Embassy been speaking about this? If Snowden were to land and show up in Ecuador, would he be paraded about very publicly? Would he be whisked away? Would the U.S. attempt to grab him on the streets of Ecuador? Any of those?
I don't think for the time being that the U.S. Embassy are going to say anything. That I think they're probably leaving it to Washington. John Kerry has obviously been speaking. I think in terms of also the sort of jingoism of parading him, I think that wouldn't be hugely in Ecuador's best interest, but that's not to say that it won't happen. And because, of course, we didn't get the chance to see Julian Assange in Quito, he's only been in the embassy in London. We can't really compare yet to that situation, but one would suspect he'd probably do interviews, he'd probably be reasonably public, and there would be some kind of welcoming committee if he were to make it to Ecuadorian soil.
Would he be offered an academic position like Chinese dissidents are often offered here in the United States?
That might be the kind of situation they find for him. Really, I think all of those questions, all the finer details of what he would do if he makes it here, he still has a long way to go. We don't yet know whether or not he's winging his way to Havana, whether or not he's going to pass through Caracas. It's still, I think, the fact that he's not clearly on this flight, and it's not to say he's not definitely on the flight to Havana, makes it much harder to know exactly what will be coming next.
Waiting for Snowden, perhaps it's the title of Will Grant's latest memoir. He's the Mexico and Central America correspondent for the BBC, waiting for Edward Snowden, perhaps destination Ecuador. Thanks so much. While Edward Snowden is jet-setting around the world, we're asking you about your summer travel plans. He certainly has an odd set of visas, if indeed he's collecting them. We got this from Newtonville, Massachusetts. My best girlfriends and I go to a cabin in Weld, Maine. We've been doing it since just after college, and I hope we're on the lake playing backgammon and drinking bourbon when we're old and gray. Good luck to you there. A listener from Charlotte, North Carolina, is off to Folly Beach, South Carolina. They write, it's the only place on the East Coast that's still clean and not commercialized yet. Oops, we gave it away. And a listener from Salem, Oregon, writes, Oceanside, Oregon. I actually know that place. It's spectacularly beautiful. Where my mother grew up, says this listener, and went to the beach, and where I went all the time as a kid. It's also the first beach my mom, me, and my daughter visited. So where are you off to this summer? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or tweet us at The Takeaway. Coming up, the state of the Taliban and the future of Afghanistan. This is The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.